Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Walter P. Maximovich. He is a professor, clinician, and medical scientist in the Department of Medicine, Division of Rheumatology at the University of Alberta, Edmonton, Canada. He is Canadian Royal College and American Board of Internal Medicine certified in internal medicine and rheumatology. He's the 2012 recipient of the Distinguished Investigator Award from the Canadian Rheumatology Association, and he founded Care Arthritis Limited, a Canadian company focused on the development of personalized medicine strategies for patients with arthritis, and now serves as the chief medical officer. His primary research interests are the imaging and treatment of spondyloarthritis, psoriatic arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and osteoarthritis. He has authored over 500 journal articles, book chapters, and many hundreds of abstracts. He is a reviewer for multiple journals, including New England Journal of Medicine, The Lancet, Arthritis and Rheumatology, Arthritis Care and Research, Annals of Rheumatic Diseases, the Journal of Rheumatology, and Seminars in Arthritis and Rheumatism. Dr. Maximovich is an accomplished international speaker at academic congresses, educator for rheumatologists, and is considered an international opinion leader on spondyloarthritis. Among his most notable innovations are the development of the Spondyloarthritis Research Consortium of Canada, or SPARC, MRI scoring systems for inflammation and structural damage in the sacroiliac joints and spine that are now industry standard in clinical trials. Most recently, he co-invented the 14-3-3-ETA biomarker, which is now licensed for diagnostic testing of patients with rheumatoid arthritis. Dr. Maximovich is a member of the Assessment of Spondyloarthritis International Society and the Spondyloarthritis Research and Treatment Network, and has served on their executive boards. Most recently, he has been the international principal investigator of the Global Classification in Axial Spondyloarthritis Inception Cohort Study. Dr. Maximovich, you're a busy man, so thank you for joining us on SpondyCast to talk about imaging and spondyloarthritis. How are you today?
I'm great, and thank you for inviting me to talk about something that I feel so passionately about.
No, we're so glad to have you, and I have a bunch of questions, and I'll just get it up front to thank you for the work you're doing in biomarkers, because I think it's extremely exciting. But let's talk a little bit about imaging. So, you know, before we get into that, though, can you tell me a little bit about how you got into rheumatology?
I was quite interested in immunology as a medical student. And when I first started seeing patients with abnormalities of the immune system, and I saw that these abnormalities affected various different organs, It looked like something very interesting and something I wanted to understand more and something that I wanted to help patients with. It was just a fascinating group of diseases. And so it sort of tied together my interest in the science of the immunology and these remarkable clinical features that people had. And now it's got even more exciting because there's so much that we can do to help people.
Amazing. Thank you. Okay, so many of us who have spondyloarthritis that listen to SpondyCast, I think we often have to go through the MRI, X-ray regimen. But how often should spa patients undergo imaging like x-rays or MRIs to monitor the conditions?
I think increasingly it's becoming essential at diagnosis, especially if you want to make an early diagnosis. MRI keeps getting better. radiography, x-rays don't really improve very much with time, but the technology for MRI keeps getting better. And so our pictures of the spine and the sacroiliac joints where the disease begins just keep getting better, more detail, more resolution. It just becoming so much more important that people get an MRI done and we don't rely on an x-ray. And even after the diagnosis has been made, it may be difficult to determine what's causing a patient's symptoms. I mean, back pain can occur for so many reasons besides inflammation in the spine. And sometimes it can be quite hard to distinguish between inflammation causes of back pain and, you know, mechanical slip discs or worn out joints in the back. And that's, again, another circumstance where MRI is really helpful. So, and it's also especially helpful if the patient's not responding to treatment. And we might be thinking about starting, you know, one of the expensive biological therapies. And so there's all of these circumstances where the imaging is really so helpful.
And so once you've moved through upon diagnosis, then how often do people usually have the imaging done, or how often is it recommended, or is it based on disease activity?
Yeah, it's very much based on symptoms. So if somebody is started on a treatment after the diagnosis is made and they respond very well, there's really not much point in continuing to do an MRI. You know, if the symptoms come back and you really want to understand what's causing the symptoms, and especially if they're quite troublesome and persistent, then it's often very helpful to repeat the MRI to understand if it's really active inflammation or something else that's causing the back pain.
We talk a lot about this difference, like the inflammation versus mechanical back pain here at SpondyCast and in spondylitis land. Are there different types of imaging that are useful at different stages?
It's not so much at different stages, but you definitely do need specific type of MRI for spondylitis versus other causes of back pain. And so the sacroiliac joints need to be assessed in a specific way. And what I mean by that is that we need to be able to detect the inflammation. And to be able to detect the inflammation, we need a specific type of MRI. And so it really is important that when the patient is seeing, for example, the primary care physician or a rheumatologist, and there's discussion about having an MRI, that the doctor does indicate that there's a possibility that this could be spondylitis. And that should really trigger a different type of MRI than is done routinely for the evaluation of back pain. For example, if the doctor suspects a slip disc, you would have a different type of MRI than if the doctor thinks it's spondylitis. And this is an important point because a lot of rheumatologists don't understand this.
That's interesting. So can you elaborate there?
Yeah. Most rheumatologists, I would say, don't really understand the differences between the different types of MRI. And, you know, if you have a slip disc, you have a specific type of MRI. If you have inflammation related to spondylitis, you need something that we call a fat-suppressed MRI. So what do we mean by that? So what we're looking for when we look at an MRI scan of a patient with spondylitis, we're looking for inflammation inside the bone. specifically the bone marrow. So the interior of the bone is the bone marrow. And, you know, that's where you may have blood-forming cells. You produce blood cells in the bone marrow. But as you get older, the marrow becomes filled with fat cells. And these fat cells might obscure the inflammation on an MRI. So the MRI picks up fat, and fat kind of obscures the signal from inflammation. In simple terms, what MRI is detecting is two types of signal. It's detecting the signal from fat, and it's detecting the signal from water. And in some circumstances, you want the type of MRI that picks up fat. And in other circumstances, you want the type of MRI that picks up water. So when you have inflammation inside the bone, you're producing a lot of, you know, swelling and fluid. You know, if you have swelling, you know, if you cut yourself and it becomes swollen because there's lots of inflammation with tissue, fluid, and cells. It's the same in the bone marrow of patients with spondylitis. They get inflammation in the bone around the sacroiliac joints. And we use a special type of MRI that picks up the water related to inflammation. So that's a specific type of MRI that we call fat-suppressed MRI. What it basically means is that the doctor really needs to indicate on the requisition, I think this patient could have spondylitis. If the doctor writes that on the requisition, the radiologist will know what type of MRI they have to do. If the doctor only says, this patient has back pain and I don't know what's causing it, there'll be a different type of MRI done. So it's really important to indicate on the rec that the patient takes to the imaging center. It's really important that the doctor is thinking about spondylitis as a cause of chronic, long-standing back pain with symptoms that begin early in life, less than 45 years of age. You know, so if somebody has chronic back pain beginning early in life, they should really be evaluated, and especially if they carry the B27 gene that I'm sure a lot of your listeners and members of the association know about. This is the gene that's associated with spondylitis. So young onset of back pain, positive B27 gene, they should get that specific type of MRI.
That's kind of an aha moment for me. I think many of us wish you'd been around before we went for our MRIs the first time. Are there times between X-ray and MRI that X-ray is better? Is the MRI always better for suspicion of spondylitis?
MRI is always going to be better because MRI picks up, it detects directly the inflammation. And it also detects other things that occur as a consequence of having inflammation. So there's kind of two things that happen in the joint of people who have spondylitis, in the sacroiliac joints and the spine. First of all, there's the inflammation itself. An X-ray does not detect that. X-ray only detects the damage caused by inflammation. So when inflammation is present, after a while, it'll cause the bone to kind of degrade, to wear out, and you get something called an erosion. It's like a hole in the bone. You know, the joint margin, what we call the cortex of the bone, is basically eaten away by the inflammation. And so a hole appears in the margin of the bone at the joint. And if you look at it in an X-ray, it's sort of, I say to patients, like a mouse taking a bite out of the edge of the bone. So that's what you see on an X-ray, is the consequence of the inflammation. You don't see it directly on an X-ray. The MRI is going to show you directly the inflammation. And so you're going to see abnormalities before there's even any damage to the bone. Then when the inflammation tries to sort of heal and tries to get better, there's a process that we call fat metaplasia. And this is a kind of an attempt at repair, you know, trying to get rid of the inflammation, but it gives you another appearance on the MRI that we call fat metaplasia. So I can tell when I look at an MRI scan if a patient had MRI in the past, I can tell they had inflammation in the past, as well as any inflammation that is currently present. And so I can detect these abnormalities, which are not evident on an X-ray. And then I can also detect the damage caused by the inflammation. So MRI detects all of these things. The X-ray only detects the damage to the bone that's caused by the inflammation. That, of course, can take years to develop. Whilst the inflammation, you can see that in a matter of months, sometimes in a matter of weeks. You know, you have some people who are at high risk of getting spondylitis, and these people will sometimes be exposed to, you know, a bacterial infection, for example, related to food poisoning. And so they have an infection like this, and then they can get back trouble 2 to 3 weeks after the infection. And you can see abnormalities on the MRI in these patients. So it can occur in an acute situation like that very quickly.
So like an infection that leads to the presence of
inflammation in the sacroiliac joints, the first feature of spondylitis.
Very interesting. That's really interesting. That's another episode. I would love to dig into that. I remember back 10, 15 years ago when I was first Dr. Googling, and I think many of us were, that there was a lot of talk of like these things, spondylitis isn't caused by anything like a virus but I think that perception has changed. So I'm glad we're able to see it now, right? And diagnose more quickly because of it. So when people are moving through the progression of the disease or stability of the disease, how do they, if they feel like the disease is progressing, should they reach out to the doctor, ask for an MRI, or how can they understand, like, if the imaging is showing whether or not they're stable or progressing?
Yeah. So that's a very good question. And I think first and foremost, what's really important is the level of symptoms. You know, if a patient's feeling very well and the symptoms are under control, it's really questionable if there's really any point in doing an X-ray or an MRI, any kind of imaging. On the other hand, if the patient is not doing that well, and symptoms are significant, quality of life is impaired, the patient's not sleeping well because of the symptoms, all of these things are going to be assessed by the rheumatologist. And then the rheumatologist may well wonder if this is really spondylitis causing the problem or something else. Now, for example, it's not unusual for people with spondylitis to have pain in the buttocks that shoots down the back of the leg. And sometimes that might be difficult to distinguish from other things like sciatica, right? So a slipped disc that's compressing the nerve. Sometimes people describe things like numbness or shooting pains. And then you might wonder whether a patient might have a disc that's pressing on the nerve. And so an MRI is going to help you with all of these things. It's going to tell you if, in fact, the patient has active inflammation. And if, for example, the inflammation has moved from the sacroiliac joints to the spine. Now, when inflammation moves into the spine, so higher up the spine, that's something that always concerns me. Because then I think that the patient has, if you like, a second stage of the disease. And that I think more intensive control of the inflammation is warranted. And so I'd be more inclined at that point to institute more intensive measures for treatment. So that's another circumstance where the MRI might help. So it might be, for example, that the patient began a few years back with having pain in the lower back and in the buttocks. And now, a few years later, the lower back pain isn't so much of a problem, but there's pain in between the shoulder blades. And there's pain when the patient coughs or sneezes. And this pain in between the shoulder blades is becoming a real problem. So then an MRI evaluating the spine may be really beneficial because then you might suspect that the inflammation has progressed up the spine. And that's an indication for evaluation of the spine by MRI.
That's really, I've never heard it described that way as it moves upward. In fact, for listeners can't see, but I stood up. You made me stand up and think about where mine is at. So if I'm a patient, and I've gone and gotten my MRI, for whatever reason, are there any specific markers or discussion points we should think about when we're talking with the physician or the rheumatologist afterwards?
Well, I think it's very helpful to actually see the MRI. In this day and age, it's very straightforward to show the MRI to the patient. So we're all dealing with, electronic medical records, and it's very easy to actually pull up the MRI. And I think it's very helpful for people to actually see their MRI so that people understand what it is that's causing the problem and what we're trying to accomplish. And especially if the response to treatment is kind of so-so, or if we think there's another cause, so I'm almost always, showing, unless the MRI is completely normal, I'm almost always showing the imaging to my patients because I think it's really important that people understand what's causing the problem and why I'm choosing a particular course of treatment. So, if it's inflammation that's causing the problem, I'm likely then to recommend some change in the type of medication that I'm going to prescribe. On the other hand, if it's, for example, worn out joints or a disc that's protruding on a nerve, I'm going to prescribe something else. I might prescribe, for example, of course, a physiotherapy to strengthen the core muscles. There's other the things that you can do in that circumstance, but it's really important that people are as informed as possible so that they understand why a particular course of treatment has been recommended.
So would you say the MRI essentially like tells the story?
It does. It's not the only piece of the story because yes, there's the clinical evaluation, the questions from the physician, the physical exam. But a lot of times the MRI is indeed decisive in deciding on a course of treatment. We simply can't examine the spine very easily. And we can look for things like mobility. Tenderness is not really that helpful in telling us a lot about inflammation. There isn't a good correlation between the degree of tenderness that we find on physical exam and what we see on an MRI. And you sometimes see really extensive inflammation in the spine in someone who has no tenderness at all when you palpate the spine. So you cannot rely on physical exam to tell you what's happening within the spinal bones.
That's so, does that vary by gender by chance?
No, it's actually the poor correlation between clinical findings and what we see in MRI. It's very similar between males and females. Maybe it's a little bit better in males, but it's still, the correlation between the two is still poor in both genders.
So it's part of the bigger story.
Yes.
A chapter.
You can't rely on your physical exam as a rheumatologist to get a complete picture. You know, in a patient who's very symptomatic, you've really got to get the imaging done.
Okay. So on that note, at least down here in the US, there are sometimes costs associated, significant costs associated with imaging. And I'm sure Canadians up in your neighborhood also at times experience different challenges. But are there ways, like for people who are concerned about these costs and insurance coverage, how do you prioritize the MRIs or overall imaging?
Yeah, it's very much driven by the level of symptoms. And one of the things that drives costs is the more imaging you do, the more it costs, not surprisingly. Now, in most people, you probably only need to get an MRI scan of the sacroiliac joints for a diagnosis. And so, you know, I don't think we need to do complete spine evaluation in the majority of patients. In the majority of patients, just the sacroiliac joints is going to be sufficient to get a diagnosis. And, you know, it really, imaging should really be reserved for patients who really aren't responding well to simple treatments. You know, basically everybody who's got spondylitis should be, you know, making sure that they're really exercising and keeping their muscles and the spine and the core strength really up to shape, and really try and maintain, you know, ideal body weight, and you know, look after themselves as we advocate for all patients, and you know, using simple anti-inflammatories. And really, if the symptoms are really go beyond those pain control measures, and it's very clear that someone is struggling and has a poor quality of life, we really need to get the imaging done. And I think most insurance providers are going to get it done. And, you know, in Canada, patients with spondylitis are actually prioritized for imaging because we know that there's a lot that we can do to help people. I mean, it'd be different if it was a condition where we couldn't help people. I mean, degenerative disorders, for example, it's very challenging to do a lot in those circumstances. But there's one condition that we can really do a lot to help people, it's spondylitis. And so the imaging really must be prioritized for patients.
That's awesome. So newer imaging techniques and AI, how do you see that advancing diagnosis or what we understand about SPA in the future, or what are you excited about?
Okay, so the quality of the MRI image is getting better and better. Until recently, one of the challenges that we had was that MRI was not very good at outlining the margins of bone, the sort of the cortex, the margins of bone. X-rays are actually better at outlining bone. They have been until recently. CT scans are the gold standard for evaluating the margin of the bone and to look for joint damage. Now, MRI, though, is increasingly advancing to the point that we can produce an MRI scan that looks like a CT scan. So there are different types of what we call MRI sequences, and this is sort of connected with the physics of MRI. But there are more and more advanced techniques that give you an incredibly detailed picture. And there are certain techniques that are based on artificial intelligence that can give you an MRI picture that looks really identical to a CT scan. I'm not too sure that the will necessarily need CT scans in the future. MRI is getting to be so good that we may not need to use a CT scans. Now, the other way that people are working with AI now is to see whether AI can make a diagnosis of spondyloarthritis. So early diagnosis, or at least flagging the MRI scan simply to indicate this is abnormal and this is normal. And the abnormal goes to a radiologist for further interpretation. So, if you can at least get an AI algorithm that will at least distinguish between abnormal versus normal, and the abnormal scans go to a radiologist, now you're making a radiologist's time more productive and, wasting less time on normal scans. But people are also going beyond that to see whether AI can actually make an accurate diagnosis. I don't think we're quite there yet, because it's a very complex picture in the sacroiliac joint. You'll recall earlier in the podcast, I talked about MRI picking up not just inflammation, but also abnormalities in tissue repair, what we call fat metaplasia, and also damage to bone. And so all of these different things occur together at the same time, and that makes the picture quite difficult to diagnose. So we're making progress, but whether it's going to replace a radiologist yet, I don't think we can say that at this point. But I think we're not that far away from at least being able to say that a scan is abnormal and should be reviewed by a radiologist.
I remember on this AI side, we had at the Unmet Needs Conference a while back, someone presented on AI and radiology. And it was, for me as a layperson and a patient, it was fascinating to see what's happening. And I think just like everything else, I'm excited to see things move forward, but I would agree. I don't know if I want any of the medical team to be eliminated because of AI. I don't think I'm ready for that. Okay, so a couple of final questions before we finish episode one, and then we are going to have you back in the near future. But for people with SPA who have comorbid conditions like osteoporosis or inflammatory bowel disease, are there more specific imaging needs for them, or are they pretty traditional?
Well, for evaluating spondylitis, it's basically the same type of MRI, but there's other imaging that you might want to do. So if somebody's had their disease for quite a while and they're getting on, getting into the fifth and sixth decades of life, it wouldn't be a bad idea to get a bone density assessment. This is a kind of an X-ray. A bone density assessment to look for osteoporosis, thinning of bone, because people with spondylitis are at increased risk for this. So the bone may be more liable to fracture. And you especially don't want that to happen in the spine, because you could have a serious problem in the spine. And of course, people who have inflammatory bowel disease, they may get a specific type of MRI that outlines if they have inflammation of the intestine. And so there are other techniques there that people might use to evaluate the severity of inflammatory bowel disease. So yes, people with spondylitis have these comorbidities, and especially osteoporosis, I think, in people who've had their disease for quite a while really should get a bone density test done.
Okay. And for someone, I'm going to ask you a curveball, for someone who's seen a lot of images of people's spines, et cetera, for spine health and keeping your bones healthy, what do you recommend for vitamin intake, regular, I guess, general diet or thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you what I do. I very much practice what I preach. And I can tell you I've got some worn out discs. And, you know, it's particularly important for me to take care of my spine health. So first of all, I watch my weight. And if I think I'm getting a little bit overweight, I'll practice intermittent fasting. So I confine my eating to 12 and 7. I avoid sugar. I watch the food labels and don't eat anything with over 20% fat. And I practice core strengthening exercises to keep my core strength in good shape. And I also exercise my upper and lower body. And I try and take really good care also of my cardiovascular health. So, you know, I'm doing aerobic conditioning. And in fact, I even ran my first half marathon last year.
Congratulations.
And I take 2,000 units of vitamin D. I particularly am cognizant of taking that in the winter months when there's less sunshine around. And I think actually building bones is particularly important in your adolescent years because you reach peak bone mass sort of around your mid-20s. And so it's really important that, you know, we provide good advice to our younger patients. But nevertheless, vitamin D, I think, there's a lot of benefits from taking vitamin D.
Yes.
And the other really important factor I wanted to mention is smoking is a big no-no, because that impairs the circulation to the disc. It increases the risk of osteoporosis. It often goes with other bad health habits. And, you know, people tend not to exercise when they're also smokers. They also have less good, you know, lung health and cardiovascular health. So you would really do yourself a big favor if you stop smoking. So those are the things that I think are really important for people.
Yeah, I would agree. And for anyone on the wanting to quit wagon, we have a podcast with Carol Southard, who's like one of the nation's leading Mayo trained smoking cessation folks. And I'll vouch for it. I was a smoker, and until my doctor came in the room and shut the door one day and said, "Your primary health problem is not spondylitis. It is that you smoke. And I'm not sure I'm going to keep treating you until you get rid of it." So I was motivated, but I would agree. And the vitamin D is something I appreciate the shout out there, because with two teenagers, I'm relentless in the winter months here in Chicago. And I bet you are in Canada about, I give them the public service announcement daily. So I think that about wraps us for episode one with Dr. Maximovich. I would love to thank you for being here, and we're looking forward to having you back again soon.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Anytime, I'd be delighted.
Okay, we'll be back next week with episode two. SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.